Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, it's me, Mike. I run the Sonar Podcast Network, the very one you're listening to right now. I love podcasting and I love the Canadian podcast community. And if you're a podcaster, work in podcasting, or just someone who loves podcasts, you're going to want to listen up. I'm proud to announce that I've been working very hard behind the scenes on an incredible podcasting event in Toronto on June 6th, the Soundwave Summit 2024. And as a Sonar listener, you get 15% off on all tickets with the code SONAR15. An awesome group of podcast companies and creators have banded together to create a space for podcasters and fans to build community, share knowledge, and celebrate indie productions. There will be a ton of informative sessions all day, including talks from Canada Land, Vocal Fry, Black Canadian Creators, Lead Podcasting, and of course, from us, the Sonar Network. And in the evening, there will be a showcase of live podcast recordings from Blacklantic, Squirrel Talk, and the Women of Ill Repute. And it's all emceed by the amazingly talented and Survivor-winningest host of Happy to See Me podcast, Erica Kostupinen. Join us for insightful workshops on podcasting, networking with industry pros, drinks, and overall amazing opportunities to meet and collaborate with like-minded podcast lovers. Come for the sessions in the day, the live podcast showcase at night, or better yet, come for the whole thing. Tickets are going fast, so get them now at thesoundwavesummit.com. And don't forget to use the code SONAR15 for 15% off all tickets. That's SONAR15. See you there.
Real Legitimate Apparitions is told one episode after another, but exists all at once. Headphones recommended. Episode 8 starts now.
The following was recorded between January 4th and 5th, 2015.
I got into my car and I inched my way back and forth out of the parallel parking spot. I had more tapes to listen to, a lot more to learn. I was eager to spend another sleepless night listening to my dad's musings. The light was green on Spadina and I was turning north when a man ran in front of my car.
Dylan! Dylan, stop the car! Stop the car!
Desmond?
Let me in!
Why? What is it?
I can't believe I just found you.
What?
Let me in.
Sure. Okay. What is it? It's Rachel. She told you. She's in danger.
She sent me to find you.
Rachel?
Yeah.
Where is she?
She's at my dad's place.
What's wrong?
Let's go. Can you do a U-turn?
Okay, fine. Is Rachel okay?
She says she's in danger.
What? Why? From what?
I don't know. She just told me to run and find you at Spadina and Bloor. What did she tell you?
Nothing. How far is your dad's place?
Down by the water.
All the way?
Yeah, I Ubered.
Did you call the police?
No.
Okay, we should.
She called me out of nowhere. I was picking up some dinner and she told me to come get you. What did she tell you?
Nothing. I haven't spoken to her for a while.
I think you know everything, but you don't know shit.
Yeah. Okay. See you never.
What happened?
I was at the restaurant around the corner picking up dinner and she called me and she was yelling and freaking out and she told me that she was in danger and I had to meet you at Blorn's Medina and bring you back to help her.
Why?
To help her.
From what?
I don't know. But she was really freak.
And you didn't ask.
I was
saying, check on her.
What can I do? Can I come home? And she was like, no, don't come home. Go get Dylan.
It's okay, so she's not just like pulling a prank or something.
No, man. This is different. She also said a name, Thomas.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
What did she say about Thomas?
That's all. Just the name. Why? What is it?
You should have checked on her!
No, man. She said I had to get you. Your phone is dead.
But if she's in danger, why would you just leave her alone?
She just fucking said, go get him. I wanted to help her, and she made it pretty fucking clear what she needed. You think she was talking about the Thomas you work with?
I don't know.
Is there another Thomas? Like an ex?
Something happened between the Thomas guy and me.
The guy from Haunt Force?
Yeah.
But he didn't seem like the kind of guy.
Yeah, he changed. He changed, okay?
Would he hurt her?
I don't know!
Left up here. You know what? Fuck this, man. Give me your phone. I'm calling the cops.
No, I don't know. Don't do it. No.
No?
Yeah, no.
Bro, but if she's in danger,
No, don't call them.
It's a right over here.
How far are we?
A couple minutes.
Did she say anything else?
Yeah. So I answer, and right away she's yelling. And I'm like, Rachel, baby, calm down. What's happening? And she's like, I'm in danger. And I'm already like out the door running home. And she says, I have to come get you. And I'm like, why? Let me help you. And she's like, no. You gotta go get Dylan. And I'm like, I'll call him. What's his number? And she says, your phone is dead. And I'm like, no. Let me come back and check on you. And then I'll go get Dylan. And she's all like, don't you dare come home without him. You have to meet him at the corners with Dino Bloor and bring him here.
What did she say about Tom?
She was just like, Thomas! Thomas! I don't know, it was scary. Take a ride over here.
We pulled into the driveway of a tall glass condo building at the harborfront. Desmond passed me the fob from his pocket and I held it to the sensor and the garage door slowly rolled open.
What floor are you on?
22nd.
I pointed the car into the closest parking spot. We got out and both ran to the access door. Desmond jammed the elevator buttons and one arrived almost instantly. Inside, he hit the 22nd button. I noticed the top floor was 35. Desmond dipped left out of the door and I followed. The hallway jutted to the right and then to the left. He stopped and hammered on a door.
Rachel? Hey, baby, Rachel, I got Dylan.
Des?
The door opened and Rachel was standing there.
Hey. Hi.
My heart surged with joy at seeing her okay. She looked a bit tired, maybe a bit sick, but she was okay.
Hey, it's good to see you.
You too.
If she'd made Des and I run across the city for no reason, I didn't care as long as she was okay.
You're okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
They embraced. I felt all the tension evaporate off Desmond, like a balloon releasing its air.
Okay, I guess, come in.
Desmond led the way inside and I closed the door behind me. We walked down a short hallway with a big kitchen with polished black counters on the right and a large home office filled with computer screens on the left. At the end was a living room. A curvy, modern couch sat in the middle beside an elegant glass coffee table. On the wall hung a massive widescreen TV about 3 inches thick. Beneath the couch, on the polished, gleaming wood floor, was a thick, shaggy carpet with a blanket crumpled on it. On the other end of the room was a stylish bookcase, featuring bone carvings, metal figurines, wooden masks. But the outstanding aspect of the stylish room was the windows. The entire length of the far wall, which was about 40 feet, was pane after uninterrupted pane of floor-to-ceiling glass. The entire living room was reflected back on itself, like a semi-translucent mirror.
Have a seat.
Rachel took a seat on the couch and I followed her. She reached down, picked up the crumbled blanket, and wrapped it around her legs. I tried to connect eyes with her, but she was avoiding me.
Oh, I need a glass of water. You want one?
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Rachel was looking down at the shag carpet.
Hey, you okay? Des said he had, you wanted to see me?
Yeah. Sorry. I don't know.
Her eyes didn't leave the carpet.
It's no problem. I wasn't doing anything.
Hey, Rachel! What's this paper?
I froze. There was a knock at the door. Rachel finally looked at me. There was pain in those eyes. Confusion, but not enough fear.
Who's that?
Des walked into the room. I connected eyes with him and shook my head, trying to tell him not to answer the door. And then I noticed what he was holding.
In one hand was a full glass of water. In the other was a paper covered in pencil markings. Over and over on the page was written Thomas Bracknell. Thomas Bracknell. Thomas Bracknell.
Rachel? It's Thomas from Haunforth.
And now Desmond, Rachel, and I were all frozen, looking into each other's eyes.
Sorry to interrupt. I just need to talk to you about Dylan. Hello?
At the sound of the door opening, Des turned around.
Oh, Desmond. Hi, sorry to interrupt. Your door's unlocked.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it is.
Can I come in?
Rachel and I couldn't see Thomas from where we were on the couch, and Desmond had his back to us.
It's funny that you're here, actually.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Desmond turned around to look at us, confusion all over his face, as if the world wasn't making any sense, as if this was hilarious and mind-bending and horrific all at once. He stepped back, and Thomas came into the room. The last time I had seen Thomas was as he was closing the door on me and leaving me inside the lighthouse with three dead bodies. Today he had a backpack on, and I could immediately tell he was playing the same character he had played when I first met him. The same character he had played when he met Des and Rachel. As he stepped into the room, he immediately saw Rachel and then saw me. We connected eyes, and then there was a long pause.
Huh.
There was so much in his look. Fear, hatred, acknowledgement of the secrets we had with each other. And I probably mirrored it right back at him. The pause lasted what felt like an eternity. And then...
Well, look at that. Exactly the person I wanted to speak with.
What do you want? Thomas smiled uncomfortably. He had definitely not expected me to be here.
I just wanted to chat about what's going on.
What aspect did you want to talk about?
The dangerous path you're on.
In unison, Rachel and Desmond turned their heads towards me as if to ask what path he was talking about.
It seems like this has the potential to go a little haywire. So I think I'd like to clarify the two options I see happening. The first option is that you come with me for a drive. We can talk, hopefully come to an understanding. And I bring you somewhere so that you and those around you will be safe. The second option involves all four of us. You too. We can have everything out in the open and talk about lighthouses and parents and...
Okay.
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 So then let's go.
I stood up. Rachel was looking up at me, confused, scared.
Hold up. Where are you going?
Des was asking this to Thomas, who didn't look at him and only had his eyes on me. As if I might explode at any second. I made my way around the couch and took a step towards the hallway.
Guys, this is sketching me out a little bit. You're talking about something that I don't understand. Thomas, you came here to talk to Rachel and I about Dylan. What did you have to say?
Tom's eyes never left mine. He was making it clear that the next move was mine to make. I took another step.
Dylan! Do you even know where you're going?
I broke eye contact with Thomas and looked at Desmond.
Why did I get you, Dylan, after Rachel told me she was in danger because of you, Thomas? Huh? Can someone please fucking tell me? And why do I have your name, Thomas, scribbled all over this fucking paper?
Des held up the paper with Thomas's name written over and over. Thomas looked at it, his skin flushed.
Well, Dylan, it looks like we have to leave right now.
And why does it say on this paper, check his backpack? Huh?
Thomas's eyes flashed back to the page again, to the bottom corner where Des was now pointing. Desmond turned around to show Rachel and I as if he was a teacher demonstrating an important lesson to an elementary school class.
Does anyone understand what's going on?
And then I felt a little, like, faith, I guess, which might have been the only time in my life I'd ever felt that. It was a feeling like, while I had no idea what was going on, or why things were happening, or what was about to happen, it felt like something was trying to guide me through this ordeal. Something was on my side.
It's in your backpack, Tom.
I'm not here to hurt you, Dylan. This entire time I've been trying to help you.
And show us what's in your backpack.
You're making this really fucking difficult.
What did you come here to do?
I came here to find you.
You didn't think I'd be here.
This is your final chance to come with me.
Thomas took a step back towards the hallway, but Dez stepped in his way.
Thomas, I also want to know why you knocked on the door of my dad's apartment and called for Rachel.
Oh my god, Desmond, I can see how this is all really confusing to you.
Thomas took a step to the side to face Dez without turning his back on me.
I noticed on her social media that she was in Toronto and staying here with you, and it's primarily her that I wanted to speak with. No offense.
Okay. Then what's in your backpack?
Maybe I should just leave.
You can leave when you show us what's in your backpack.
Exactly.
Fine.
Color flushed Tom's face again as he swung the backpack off his back and into his hands. He unzipped it, reached in, and pulled something out.
Hey, no. Why don't you toss the bag to Dylan?
It was a gun. A handgun. Like a friggin' real-life gun. He dropped the bag. Desmond took a step back.
Is this what you wanted to see?
I took a step back as well. Thomas pointed the gun at Desmond, and then at me. Tom looked cornered, as if he, pointing the gun at me, was less of a threat than I was. My mind went to Rachel, who was sitting on the couch.
If you want to go, you can go.
Don't fucking say anything!
Silence filled the condo. I could almost hear Tom's brain whirring around, trying to figure out his next move. Everyone was keen to hear what it came up with.
Desmond, take a seat on the couch.
Okay. I'm going to move to the couch, all right?
Des slowly walked, palms in the air, towards the couch and lowered himself down beside Rachel. Thomas never moved the gun off of me.
Don't try anything.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Back up.
I did. I backed up until I was against the long wall of windows with my hands in the air. Thomas picked up his backpack in his left hand and followed me. We were standing in front of Desmond and Rachel, seated on the couch now as if we were doing a kind of performance.
Okay.
Thomas paused, trying to piece together his next steps. Then he placed his bag onto the coffee table and reached into it.
Okay.
One by one, Tom withdrew and placed on the table some long strips of black cloth, several thick zip ties, a loaded syringe, and three small pill bottles. He did this all with one hand as the other pointed the gun at me. I looked at Des and Rachel as they watched this process. Rachel was looking more ill by the minute. Desmond connected eyes with me.
You see, Dylan here is a very, very bad man. He's been around a bad crowd. He murdered two of my friends.
At this, Rachel looked up at me, and the look on her face was crushing. She looked shocked, as if her entire world was turning upside down and she would never be able to look at me the same way again. She looked sad, as if mourning the loss of someone. And I noticed a sliver of hatred in there, the way one might look at a murderer. And all of this was crushing because all it had taken to convince her were six words spoken by a man brandishing a gun in her boyfriend's apartment, which meant that apparently deep down she had always thought I might have done something like this. And I wished I could tell her that it wasn't true, that she hadn't been right all along.
Then why hasn't he been arrested?
The police couldn't handle him.
Why not?
He's more dangerous than you think. Rachel, I need you to take these zip ties and cuff him. Do it.
Rachel didn't move, so Tom pointed the gun at her.
Do it!
And Rachel slowly reached out and picked up the zip ties. She stood up.
If you didn't think Dylan was going to be here, why'd you bring this stuff?
Dylan, put your hands behind your back.
I did. Rachel stepped behind me and gently grabbed my hand.
I can see things.
Tom looked back at me with a kind of sneer on his face, like I was an idiot for taking it in this direction.
What?
Put them on tightly, Rachel.
Sometimes I can control the past.
What does that mean? Control the past?
Don't worry, Rachel. If he makes any moves...
And the future, I can control myself in different times.
I put my wrists together so Rachel could tighten the ties.
We were on Toronto Island and Dylan used a brick to beat two of my friends to death.
When I have a seizure, I can see a different time when I was in that same place.
And I escaped, but he would have killed me too.
And my body does what I did in the other time.
And everyone who does what he does is the same.
So I can have a movement to the future and do what I'll do
then.
And
they have so much control over me and you and everyone.
Or I can have a movement to the past and do what I did then.
I have no idea what they're doing.
That call you had, Rachel? That person who called you talking about me?
You see, there's a reason this world is falling apart.
That was a friend of mine calling you from the future.
They're always insane.
They were with me. And they died because of Tom.
Because of me?
Yes.
Neff was dead when we got there.
And Dad did all of this too. He knew Neff. He had movements.
You don't know anything about your dad. He was a predator.
I felt Rachel tense up behind me as she took a step away.
He was helping people.
He recruited people. Kids.
Who didn't know what was happening to them.
Yeah, they did.
He helped them.
He put them in danger and showed them how they could control us.
You hunt them.
He led them to their death, Dylan. And that's exactly where you're headed. If you don't end up hurting others, you're gonna hurt yourself. There's something fucking wrong with you. You're a mistake. And so was your father.
Tom's face was screwed up and red with emotion. The hate on him was radiating through the room. He was scared and mad, and the big gun in his hand made him look small. But I had heard what he said. I had heard what he thought of me. As a mistake.
I'm taking you to a place where you'll be safe and secure and where we can use your abilities for good. For progress. And not killing people with bricks. Turn around and show me your wrists.
I rotated to show him my back and the hands tied together. Rachel took another step towards the couch.
Don't sit down. Rachel, tighten them.
She returned to my hands and gently tightened them slightly.
Dylan, I know what's going to happen to you if you continue the way you are. Tighter, Rachel.
She tightened them a few more notches.
Okay. Now.
I was facing the wall of windows. The bright apartment was reflected back at me. I could see Desmond sitting on the couch watching this all unfold in his father's apartment. I could see Rachel standing just behind me, looking away towards Tom. And I could see Tom still holding the gun in the air pointed directly at the back of my head. I couldn't really make out my own face in the reflection as I wasn't that illuminated. Instead, in the shadow my body was making, I could see the city laid out in front of me. We were facing Lake Ontario. I could see the harbor and the tiny white headlights crawling down the streets below. In the distance was the lake and the Toronto Islands, where the lighthouse must be. And then I had the thought that I might have seen this condo building from the roof of the lighthouse. The lit up windows of this apartment, the one I was in now, might have been one of the thousands I had seen sitting up there after reading Dad's note. If I had known that behind one of these windows would have been the scene I'm in now, maybe I wouldn't have made the choices I did. The cold black lake continued to the horizon. Above it were a few stars breaking through and the lights of a plane cruising through the sky. All of this I saw in the shadow that my body was making on the glass. It was like I was cut out of the scene of the apartment, like I was a void, or empty space, or not there. Here. Anywhere.
There are two possible answers to the question that I posed earlier in my lessons. Are you the only spark of consciousness flowing along your lifeline? One possible answer could be no. There is a constant flow of consciousnesses through your lifeline. This would mean that there is a version of you ahead of you and behind you on your lifeline, pushing you and sucking you forward. This is good. This is good because it means that all the moments of your lifelines are being experienced by a version of you. Your birth, your first kiss, your parent cooking you a delicious meal, your child playing, your partner becoming sick, your death. It is all being experienced by a certain version of you right now. The other possible answer is yes, you are the only spark of consciousness ever to travel your lifeline. The question then becomes, where did your spark come from? And where does it go when it reaches the end of its lifeline? Perhaps when it gets to the end, it reverses and travels back down your lifeline, causing you to live your life in reverse. Maybe it starts again from the beginning because we've got the whole space-time visualization wrong, or we're short a few dimensions and your lifeline is a circle so that you are born the moment you die. And maybe, just maybe, you get to choose. Maybe your specific consciousness is allowed to climb up or down your lifeline and pause when it wants to and speed up when it wants to and experience its lifeline however it chooses forever, for a duration unlimited by time. So it doesn't matter. It has taken me, will take me, is taking me a lifetime, my lifeline, to understand you can go back. And if you can't, it didn't matter. I found it totally impossible to believe that we'll only exist once, that we'll come from nowhere, traveled up our lifeline, and then burn out. No, that makes no logical sense, so it doesn't, hasn't, won't matter. Your lifeline will always be filled with you. You existed at all times for eternity. That's it. That's what this will all mean. So build. You have to build. Make it all possible. Complete the circles. Focus. If it's not possible, it can't happen. Faith, I guess. You needed it. I need it. And now I feel like I have it. Build your tower. Build it sturdy and strong and tall. Build it great and beautiful and happy and make it into whatever you want to, because you are going to be living inside of it for all of eternity. Forever. It could be your heaven or your hell. Or I don't know. Maybe not. But you gotta build it anyway. And when it was as sturdy and great and beautiful and happy and tall as you can get it, you have to jump off the roof.
Could I do anything? Could I have a movement? But anything I did, any sudden action I could make, would put Rachel and Desmond in danger. No matter how rehearsed, how precise my movements were, I wouldn't be able to get out of this one and guarantee that Rachel and Des would be safe. And then I noticed in the reflection of the glass that Tom was holding one of the pill bottles in his hand.
Okay. Now, turn around.
I rotated slowly until I faced Tom.
Rachel, I want you to give him 8 of these pills, okay?
What are they?
They stop seizures. It's what he should be taking anyways. Catch.
Tom tossed the little bottle to Rachel, who caught it.
8?
Yes.
That's a lot.
Oh, better safe than sorry.
Why?
If he's gonna come with me, I have to know he won't try anything.
Why would his seizure hurt you?
I'm not asking you.
He's supposed to have at most 10 milligrams spread over a whole day. This would be 16 all at once.
Give him the pills, Rachel. He'll be fine.
But why?
He's dangerous! Listen to me, okay? If you give him these pills, I'll put the gun down. He takes the pills, I put the gun down. We leave. Okay?
Okay, yes. That's fine, Rachel. That's fine.
Okay.
Slowly and in silence, Rachel tapped out 8 little white pills onto her palm and displayed them to Tom.
Desmond, pass them the water.
Desmond didn't move.
How do you know what's in them, Rachel?
Pass them the water!
But I don't get it. He was willing to go with...
And then you forced my hand.
Why did you bring zip ties and a gun to my dad's place?
Des, it's okay.
I don't understand what you think is going on. I have this gun, and I'm telling you to pass the water, and if you don't, we'll use a syringe on him. And if that doesn't work, I'm gonna kill everybody in here. You understand?
I can get the water.
Rachel placed the pill bottle back on the table, reached and picked up the glass that Desmond had prepared for me earlier.
It's not going to hurt him?
No.
She placed the water glass beside her on the table and picked up the first little white pill from her palm.
Open your mouth, Dylan.
I did. Rachel placed the pill onto my tongue and then picked up the glass of water. She tipped it into my mouth. Water trickled down both my cheeks as I swallowed the pill.
Show me.
I opened my mouth back up and danced my tongue around to show I wasn't hiding the pill anywhere.
Okay, next.
You're afraid he's gonna have a seizure?
Rachel picked up the next pill. I offered her my tongue.
You think he's a witch or something?
As soon as I had shown Tom I'd swallowed the pill, he said.
Next pill.
The dose is just 2 at a time.
It's not gonna hurt him. I need him to walk. Do it.
It's okay.
Rachel turned to look at me.
It's fine. I haven't taken them in a while, so it's just like making up for it. 8 won't hurt me.
What's happening?
Don't talk. Take the pills, and then we can all relax.
It's okay. Come on. Rachel was searching my eyes for some kind of directive. I opened my mouth. Rachel placed the last 5 pills onto my tongue and then poured more water into my mouth.
Show me.
And again, I danced my tongue around my open mouth. My shirt was wet with spilt water.
Okay, that wasn't so hard. Right? Good.
Can you put the gun down?
Just wait. Gotta give it time to hit.
How did you find me in the beginning? Thomas glanced at Rachel and Dez, but decided to answer.
We've been following you your entire life. Your dad, Nathan, he was a big case. We knew that you also had epilepsy. As soon as we saw that he had left you money and instructions, we had to move in closer. Any decent father would have left his kid out of it.
That's not how it works. You can't be left out of it. It's like a disease.
So you admit it?
Yeah, it's like a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
But you're not helping.
I'm trying to.
I needed someone to tell me what was happening to me. Someone to talk to.
We can talk. We can talk all you like, but you can't be free. The way you see the world, like everything is predetermined, means that you don't take responsibility for your actions.
That's not true.
You force things to happen for selfish reasons, and you forget about everyone and everything else. You think that the goal you're after applies to just you.
What goal?
What goal? Come on. It's selfish. I mean, your dad left you, both of you, and he did a lot worse to other people.
What goal? Tom smiled like I was twisting his arm to say out loud what we both knew.
The circles, you call it, right? Completing the circles?
Yeah. Why?
Why? Why do you complete the circles?
I want to hear it from you.
You think I don't know? To escape the time lock, you think you have to complete all your circles. You think that you're special. That only you can escape just because you see outside the time lock. But what says all of us can't escape? That we don't. You ever think about that?
I was starting to get lightheaded. So this time lock is the prison?
Whatever you want to call it. Sure, prison. And to say that Rachel or Desmond or I won't escape, that you have to complete all your circles no matter what to get out, that the rest of us are just collateral, this is why you're dangerous.
But... I needed to sit down. How do we escape?
However you want to. But you have to live it first.
Where are you gonna take me?
Look at that. Looks like you're ready to go.
You said you would put the gun down.
Sure.
Thomas lowered the gun to his side.
You ready to go?
Yes.
Where are you taking him?
Dez, don't.
What?
Let him go.
Where is he going?
Dylan is dangerous. Doesn't matter. Take him and go.
Damn. Well, you heard your sister, Dylan.
Let's go.
Rachel, that's your brother.
He's not my brother.
I placed one step in front of the other, trying not to sway. It felt like I was wearing a weighted blanket. Tom put the meds, the syringe, and the black cloth in his backpack.
You don't need the gun. I'm coming.
Put the gun away. I'll see it on the security cameras.
They won't. I disabled them.
What?
I tripped the wires in the hallway, elevator, and garage.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you're good. But there might be someone in the hall.
Tom looked at me. I was afraid I might faint before I got out of the apartment, before I could get him away from Rachel and Dez. I took another few steps. Tom dropped the gun back into his backpack.
All right. After you, Dylan.
I took another few wobbly steps towards the hallway, past Rachel and Desmond. I knew this would be the last time I saw them. And then past Thomas, who now had his backpack on. When I reached the hallway, I bumped into the wall and pushed myself towards the closed front door in front of me.
Keep him safe.
I will.
Tom would take me down the elevator into his car. I'd fall asleep and he'd drive me to who knows where, to some basement or some facility or some prison. Maybe he'd force me to do movements. Maybe doctors would test me. But at least I would be out of here, out of the lives of Rachel and Dez and Madison. They'd be safe. And I would be where I was meant to be. I heard something behind me.
Hey! What are you doing? No!
Never leave a gun in your backpack, idiot.
I fell to my knees. I didn't know what had happened. I didn't feel any bullet rip through me, but then again, I couldn't feel much. I turned around. Tom was on the floor with a bullet hole in his head. Rachel was holding his gun.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I am.
The fuck?
Desmond, get a knife. Undo the zip ties on Dylan and wash them.
Yeah.
What did you do?
You have to go. The neighbors will call the cops. Hurry!
Yeah, I got them.
All right, careful. What the fuck was this guy doing? Okay, got him.
Dylan, go. Don't let anyone see you, but if the cameras are down...
He disabled the cameras because he was going to take you.
I know. Dylan, go. Wait! Des, open the door for him. For Prince.
Yeah. Okay, the coast is clear.
Go, man. Don't worry, we'll be okay.
I got up and stumbled into the empty hallway. I turned around.
Rachel!
I love you. Get out of here.
She had her phone in her hand. Desmond closed the door.
Hello? Police? I just shot someone.
I turned and made my way down the hallway that jutted to the right and then to the left. When I got to the elevator, I looked at the blurry digital numbers above the sliding doors. Two of them said P2, and the other said 15, then 16, then 17. I hadn't clicked the button, and if I did, this would be the elevator that would open, and there might be someone in it. I continued past the elevators to where the hallway jutted to the left. I flattened myself against the wall so I couldn't be seen, and waited, and listened.
Hello? This is the super. Is everyone okay?
I knew that from the condo door, you couldn't see the elevators, so I rushed back out and hit the elevator button.
Hello? I received a noise complaint.
Help!
In the elevator, I kept my head down and tried to act casual in case the camera in this elevator was on. By the time I had arrived at P1, I was practically sitting on the floor. I stumbled into the parking garage and looked around for my car. For a second, I was afraid I'd forgotten what it looked like, but there it was, sloppily parked near the ramp. I fumbled for my keys, withdrew them, and after a few tries, had slid it into the lock. When the door was open, I spun around to sit sideways in the driver's seat. Now that I was sitting, I could see I had blood spatter from Tom's head on my pants. That, combined with the spin I had just done, turned my stomach over and I hurled onto the cement beneath my feet. I felt my consciousness struggling to stay awake, like a flame about to fade out, leaving just glowing coals behind. I brought my heavy legs into the car and closed the door. I woke up with a pounding head and a really sore neck. My clothes were wet with sweat. The air in the car was stale, so I opened the door. I'd had dreams. Dreams of stumbling down hallways, chasing people. My mom, the Madison from the Sunset, Tom, and all to the tune of the Airwaves song. Over and over and over it had played, so that now it was stuck in my head. I was about to get out of the car and stretch, but I remembered Rachel's point about the security cameras. If they were looking for clues or suspects, I couldn't be seen. I started the car and backed out of the space. I probably shouldn't have been driving on the account of the meds, but I thought I could make my way slowly back up through the city to my apartment, take the side streets. I pulled up to the garage door and it opened automatically. Sunlight flooded in. It looked like it must have been 10 or 11 in the morning. As I rolled forward, my eyes adjusted. I noticed that at the top of the ramp was a cop car. I paused. Would they stop me? What would I say? I slowly rolled up the ramp. I lowered the window.
Hi.
Hi there.
What can I do for you?
We're conducting an investigation into some residents of the building. Are you a resident?
No. No, I was just seeing a friend.
Did you spend the night?
Yeah, I did.
What's the unit number?
Oh, I don't remember, to be honest. I wasn't too high up, though.
And who are you staying with?
Ashley or Brandy?
Last name?
Oh, I don't know that either. It was a long night.
What time did you get into the unit?
Like 3 or 4 a.m.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. What was this about?
Just a disturbance. Have a good day.
Yeah, okay. You too.
I did make my way slowly through the side streets of Toronto back to my apartment. I was trying to piece together memories of the events in the condo through my still pounding head. I felt drained, exhausted, and really hungover. The period I was trying to narrow in on was the conversation I'd had with Tom after Rachel had fed me the pills. There was something there that I had to remember. When I got in, I collapsed on the couch. My living room was bright with midday sun. I wished I had thicker curtains. I rolled over and saw on the table the typed letter from Thomas Bracknell, who now had a bullet in his head. Maybe he was still lying on the floor of Dez's dad's apartment. Or maybe he was at the coroner's. Or in a body bag. Maybe he was alive. Nah, I thought, as the image of Thomas's wide-open eyes and the hole blasted into his forehead slid into my mind's eye. He was long gone. I wanted to sleep. I wanted to close my eyes and drift away forever. I'll admit there was definitely a part of me that had wanted to go with Tom, to throw in the towel, to be locked up and studied and taken out of this world. I wouldn't have to make any decisions. I wanted to sleep, but there was a big part of me that still felt on edge, that still felt like I couldn't stop, I couldn't relax. Beside Tom's note was Dad's voice recorder. I reached out and hit play.
Imagine your life as a copper wire, flowing with electricity. We know that this wire ends at some point, but we also know that the electricity of our consciousness continues to flow. And so it must go somewhere to create the pull forward that we experience. The final and biggest movement is the one we will make at the end of our lifeline. It will be a complete movement. Hopefully we can choose where we'll land. Hopefully our memory will keep its imprint of its journey so far.
You can follow this story on Instagram and Twitter with @RLAseries. Please consider visiting patreon.com/RLAseries to support the show and reviewing it on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Sonar!
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.